Appreciated the song service this morning and the humble prayer, and I continue to stand in need of your prayers to hopefully bring something that the Lord will put on my mind to give to you that comes from Him. If there's any good from it, I hope you'll give Him all the honor and the glory, and however He sees fit to use me. And I know Brother Kenny desires the same interest your prayers to follow. I'll try not to talk too long to get out of Brother Kenny's way. You know, growing up, there was one word that I really hated to hear. I always knew that when I heard it, it was not good, and it was never followed by good news. I'd go to my parents, and I'd, you know, wonder my mom or my dad, and I'd want something, you know, and I would explain to them and, you know, prepared my speech ahead of time, explain maybe why I need to borrow the car or why I needed to be gone somewhere over the weekend or be able to come to Lubbock by myself or those type of things, and give all the reasons why. And invariably, I'd remember my mother and my dad would start off, "Well, I understand that, but." I never liked that word. But it was never followed by good news. You know, it was always followed by bad news. And I remember, even with my own children recently, because I had thought of this, about my kids would ask something, you know, and I'd sit there and I'd go, "Well, yeah, but." And one of them said, "You know, Dad, you know, when we know you could say the word but, that we're not going to get what we want." You know, so it's a word that is usually never followed by good news for what we want to have. But I want to point out that in the Lord gives us some direction sometimes about, it can also be extremely positive news for us when we hear that word but. It means something very positive, and I hope that we can approach it on a positive basis as we go through life, as we face problems. And again, if you're not having problems, then you're different than me and almost everybody else that I know of. Problems in our personal life, maybe problems with the loss of a close loved one, maybe financial hardship, maybe troubles at work, maybe a lot of problems that we can't ever seem to fix. You know, I'm guilty of trying to fix too many times my own problems that are unfixable. You know, maybe trouble with a family member, or maybe a trouble at work, or a financial problem. And I get myself into these holes, and I can't get myself out of them, even though I try. Well, if we have a positive attitude, looking to the Lord can fix all the problems. You know, one of the things that, you know, us men are known for is talking politics, getting together and talking politics. And it rarely ever ends good. We're always talking about how bad Washington, D.C. is to us, or Austin, things going on. And that conversation ought to end, but the heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord, and the Lord can fix those problems. That's when we ought to use but in a positive manner. You know, I've got all sorts of problems I can't handle, and I ought to stop and say, "Lord, I need help." Because whatever problems I've got, I may have something major, but the Lord can fix those problems. Start off with an example in beginning in Genesis chapter 37, leading up to Genesis 50. We're going to summarize about 13 or 14 chapters. A story you all know, it's the story of Joseph. Joseph was well blessed. His father was Jacob. He had, you know, 11 brothers that became the 12 tribes of Israel. And Joseph was blessed. His father found him the most favorite, gave him the coat of many colors that made all his brothers jealous. And you get over in chapter 37 and you see that, you know, he got in trouble that he didn't bring about himself. He got in trouble because he was blessed. And sometimes that happens to us. We may be blessed, but we still find ourselves pretty deep in trouble. His brothers got jealous of him, you know, caught him, beat him up, threw him in a ditch, then turned around and sold him to the Ishmaelites, traveling Bedouins, as we call them today, through the desert. And he was sold into slavery in Egypt. But he became, out of that then, he grew up under the house of Pharaoh and became a leader. You know, the Lord blessed him, and you'll go through there and, as I saw it, they talked, but the Lord used that opportunity to make Joseph a leader, a captain for the Pharaoh, in charge of all the food and storage. His family came down to see him, and he disguised himself for a while before he finally opened up. And during the time as Pharaoh, we know that Pharaoh's wife tricked him and deceived him and got him thrown in jail, and he was in jail. He suffered a lot of problems, and then he came out of that jail situation in good shape because he interpreted Pharaoh's dreams according to the Lord. Every time something bad news came, the Lord would step in and bless him. But for the Lord, he would have been in real trouble. We get over here in chapter 50 when He's got his whole family with him. They've all come. They've all recognized him now. He's revealed himself to him. They're all down in Egypt. He saved his entire family from starvation because up in Canaan they were having such a drought that they couldn't grow anything. So his whole family was down there. Joseph saw that his whole family was fed. Chapter 50, we find out Jacob, the father, dies, and they've buried him. And they come back over here, and we get down to verse 17, 18, and he is visiting with his brothers and sisters, those that had deceived him and turned against him and betrayed him and sold him into slavery. And he's talking to them, and they're asking forgiveness. And he grants it to them, but then he says, verse 19, and Joseph said unto them, fear not, for I am in the place of God. God put me where I am. He said, because he remembered those things his brothers had done to him. He said, verse 20, but as for you, you thought evil against me. But God meant it unto good to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people's soul alive, and therefore fear you not. I'm not mad at you because God took everything that was evil against me and turned it positive. And he gives credit to the Lord for that. Let's turn back also. Let's go over here to the book of Samuel. Let's see about David, an incident that happened here with David. David, we know, you know, was blessed of the Lord. He was chosen to be the next king by Samuel under direction of the Lord. He was chosen to be the next king. As a result of that, he went and worked as Saul, worked as a musician for King Saul. And then David turned out to be a great soldier and a great battler against the Philistines. And he did well, and the people started recognizing him for his ability in warfare. It made King Saul jealous of him. And King Saul set out to kill him. Get over here in 1 Samuel chapter 23. David is actually being pursued by Saul. He's still fighting the enemies of Israel, the Philistines, but he's got his own king whom he worked for and was close to. Now he's chasing after him. And David is running out in the wilderness hiding. Over in verse 14, it said, and David abode in the wilderness in strongholds. He's hiding from King Saul and running and been on the run of a man that he loved and had loved him at one time. Again, David didn't bring these problems on himself, but he was besieged with problems. And David abode in the wilderness in strongholds and remained in the mountain in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day. Saul was chasing him every day. But God delivered him not into his hand. I went through and looked in this and I found almost 50 references in the Bible when talked about something bad had happened. And it began with the phrase, but God turned it around. But God changed it. We see it's in a very positive fashion. We know a lot of times we'll have things happen about us. We may lose, you know, my mother and dad lost a child, their first child they had. And I read a letter from my mother to one of her sisters, and boy, it jerks at my heartstrings because she was so torn down by the fact that she lost her first son. You know, but she ended that saying, you know, but I've got faith in God. And I found that very interesting, and then, of course, the Lord blessed my mother with four other children after that. When we get in these type of circumstances, that's when we don't need to lose our faith. That's when we need to increase our faith. Because whatever has happened to you, and most of the time it's out of our control completely, but for God, it's never out of God's control. Whatever problems you've got, we need to stop and look and say, God, I need help. And, you know, he won't always wait till you ask. Sometimes he helps. He doesn't have to wait. He can help you without being asked. But if you ask God and have faith in God, we're taught throughout the Bible that people are facing now hopeless circumstances, and yet when they look to God, invariably, God gives them relief. Now, he may not take away an enemy of mine, but he gave me give me peace. He may give me peace that allows me to go forward when I'm facing some devastation in my life, in my family, with my finances, with my job, with my work, even in my church. Whatever you're facing, God can change that. He can change you on the inside. He may not change all the circumstances. You know, we don't always get what we want, and we shouldn't, because too many times I always, you know, when I go to God in prayer, I'll say, God, I got this problem, and here's how I want you to fix it. Well, if I could fix it, I'd already fixed it. You know, we get sometimes telling God how we want to fix it. We need to ask God for peace. We need to ask him to help us. And we see all sorts of examples of that throughout the Bible of where he does help us. Let me go back one more to Moses, Exodus. chapter 13. Moses was facing, you know, all sorts of problems without leading the people in and out of the nation of Israel away from Egypt, you know, and they got out of this after they got out of the Passover, and Pharaoh, all the firstborn of all Egypt were killed. Then the nation of Israel got together and were going to be led out, and Pharaoh let them go. Pharaoh changed his mind and came after them. There was a huge panic among all the people then, because suddenly Pharaoh's after them. They've all left their homes, probably 2 or 3 million people traveling together. And we all know the story. The Lord led them on. He gave them a pillar of cloud and smoke to lead them by the way. And Exodus 13, chapter 17, and it said, "And it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God led them not through the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was nearer. For God said, lest peradventure the people repent when they see war and they return to Egypt." He knew if they saw war, they'd turn back. Verse 18, "But God led the people about through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up harnessed out of the land of Egypt." People were afraid, and they got out in a case where they had no control at all out in the wilderness. Several million people, and Moses is leading them all. I can tell you, maybe many of the people were praying, but Moses was praying too. Whatever's facing us, and you look, there's just example after example, and I won't go over too many of them in the interest of time. Every time it begins with a but God changed circumstances. I'm going to go over here in the New Testament. Let's talk about how this affects us. Now, there's a lot of examples in the Old Testament about how things were looking so dark and dreary, and then the next verse begins, "But God went through and made changes for the positive." When you see it associated like that, "But God" is always a good thing. And in our prayers, you know, when things are looking terrible, when we may be facing some surgery, I've laid on the surgery table myself and scared and there by myself. You know, they always leave you out in the operating room, out in the hallway by yourself in that skimpy little robe under sheets, you know, and you're all alone. That's when it's just you and God. And you talk to him, and you know, and you don't have a whole lot to say other than, "Lord, help me." And, you know, I'd be in a real mess, but God is always there with you, especially if you ask him, if you'll talk to him. He's there with you, and he'll give you great peace. Give you grace, but God can help you. But God can lead the hand of the surgeons who operate on you. But God can bless those that care for you through His own, just like He does it with anybody. Like He uses all people, He can use whoever's helping you to change your life and turn it around. Now, I'm not saying He's going to make you rich. I'm not here. We don't preach that. We know that's not true. But God gives you the peace that passes all understanding. Over here in the book of the Romans, you know, book of Romans, Apostle Paul, book of Romans is one of the best books of the Bible, teaching us about our salvation, not only timely today, but also eternally. First of all, Apostle Paul goes through there and tells us we have to have righteousness to give and get to heaven. It's clear, we have to be righteous to get to heaven. Then he says, verse chapter 3, but wait a minute, there's not any of us righteous. We're all guilty. And you go read Paul's laundry list and you'll see none of us deserve to be let out of any of our problems. Because that's our human nature. We're sinful people, born that way. Gets over here in chapter 5, though, and he starts telling us, though, but Christ has come along, he as a righteous man to die for us who are without righteousness. Verse 6 of chapter 5. "For when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly." Here's a righteous man that died, chose to die, for the ungodly, chose to die for us. And I don't mean that generically. I mean he died for you in particular. We need to put that on an individual. We need to think of that as ourselves. He died for you personally. He knows your name, knows every hair on your head. He knows everything about you, knows what you're thinking at all times. And I wish he didn't do that. I wish he didn't always know what I'm thinking. But that's how well he knows us. And our sin, but for God, we remain in our sins. But for God, we're going to hell. And he says, when we're without strength, sinly, we're ungodly. For he says, "For scarcely for a righteous man will one die." If we get a good man, or who's going to go lay our life down for a very righteous man? He said, not very often. "Yet peradventure for a good man, some people will dare to die." Some people dare to die. Doesn't happen very often. A righteous man or a good man, nobody goes and lays their life down for another man. We see that happen occasionally. We see that happen in war. But the Apostle Paul says, that doesn't happen very often for righteous men and good men. But verse 8, he says, but God commended his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Christ died for you while we were yet a sinner. Now, it takes righteousness to get to heaven. You're never going. You're never going on your own. Christ died for you. Nothing could be done about that. You can't do a thing to get yourself from hell, to save yourself from hell. But he says here, but God commended his love toward us while we were yet sinners, Christ died. Much more then, being now justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. He has made this personal for each one of you. There is no way you're going to get to heaven. You're going to hell. And there's nothing you can do about it. It's impossible for you to change. But God steps in and sacrifices his own son for you. And again, I'm talking to each one individual. I don't want this to be generic. I want you to take this personal. This is personal. He died for you. He knows you. He knows your name. He's got you wrapped up in the palm of his hand. He's got your name written in his hand, not written with washable ink like we do with our kids. It's engraved. Isaiah tells us he has engraved your name in the palm of his hand, and nobody can open that palm up. And you're a sinner. We're told how bad of sinners we are. And yet, he's died for you personally. But God stepped in and saved us, each one of us, from our hellbound nature. Go over here in Ephesians chapter 2. Got a couple more, and then I'll get out of Brother Kenny's way. Ephesians chapter 2 says, basically, Paul's telling us the same thing. And you hath he quickened who were dead in trespasses and sin, wherein in times past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. Lost my place here a minute. Okay, here I am. Among them, among whom also we had our conversation in times past in the lusts of our flesh, we're very lustful people, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind. Our minds are more occupied with the things of the world than they are the things of God, who were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. He paints a terrible picture, Apostle Paul does of us. Verse 4 starts off, but God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sins, even when we were at our very worst, hath quickened us altogether with Christ. By grace ye are saved. We go on, and he continues that on. But again, Christ stepped into your life, and this is personal. This is not generic. This is personal with each one of you individually. He stepped into your life when you were a sinner, continue to be a sinner, and yet by his love and his mercy, he saved you. That's again the but God. Let's look at this from the picture of the entire church. Go to 1 Corinthians with me if you have your Bible open. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. And Apostle Paul's talking about going out and planting churches. He's talking about his travels throughout Corinth and other places where he went out and started churches. Verse 5 tells us, he's talking about himself, who then is Paul? Who then is Paul? And who is Apollos? But ministers by whom ye believed, even as the God gave to every man. God gives us ministers, and you believed him as God gave them to you. In verse 6, he said, I have planted. I've gone out here and I've planted churches. Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. You know, Brother Kenny and I, this is a subject we talk about a lot. We see a lot of the churches declining attendance at churches, and we worry about it. What are we going to do about it? Well, we're to do the basic here. We're to plant. We're to try to come and preach the gospel. One of us may be a Paul. One of us may be Apollos. We're not anywhere like those two guys, but that's our roles. But we can't make people come to church. God does the increase. Our job is to come and plan and talk to you and ask your help and ask each member the help. And I'd ask you to do this. Everyone in this church, ask the Lord to bless this church. He's the one that'll provide the increase. We don't have any control over that. And Paul makes that very clear. He provides the increase. He's, you know, and that's what, you know, that Brother Kenny and I have to reassure ourselves every now and then. One of us can plant and the other can water, but God gives the increase. We need to recognize that, and we need to go to Him and ask Him, provide us the increase. The main one I want to finish with, and again, there's more than 50 references to this. I was amazed when I started reading this. Something bad had happened, and then it talks about bad, it gets you down the dump, gets you depressed, and it would say, but God. And that's what I want you to focus on. Whatever is facing you in your life, whatever we're facing as a church, whatever we're facing individually, you know, you get depressed about it sometime about, I can't do anything, everything's going to pot, I can't seem to make anything work. I want you to remember those words. But God. God can fix that. God can usually, with our problem, most time we get depressed is our mind and our hearts more than anything else. But God can put that positive thought in our heart. He can give us the peace that we can't get anywhere else. He can give us that mental impression that we can't get anywhere else. Apostle Paul tells us in first chapter of 1 Corinthians, chapter 10, he's given us warnings, examples, and he tells warnings each one of us individually, and our brother Kenny has used this quote, "Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. There hath no temptation taken you, but such is common to man." Now, how are we tempted? We are tempted. Go over in the book of James, it'll tell you. You're tempted because of your own lust, because of sinful nature in us. God doesn't ever tempt us. It's not God that ever tempts us. It's Satan that tempts us. And Satan is always there. I've said before, you know, Satan knows you better than you know yourself. He knows your strengths. He knows your weaknesses. He'll always attack your weakness. It's why it's good to know yourself and admit your weakness. Admit, I like football better than I like church, because then that's when Satan's going to hit you. Admit that I like going camping better than I like church. Admit I like watching TV better than I do reading my Bible. You need to acknowledge your weaknesses, because then you acknowledge that's where Satan's going to attack. And you can ask the Lord, keep me out of those temptations. And that's what Apostle Paul is telling us here. There is no temptation taking you, but such is common to man. Every man is tempted. You're all going to be tempted every day. You're all going to be tempted away from the things that are the Lord's. There is no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape that ye may be able to bear it. You know, we all have our temptations, and we all sometimes don't do the things that we know we should do. We're tempted, and that's Satan tempting you. But for God, Satan would overwhelm you. Satan is more powerful than anybody else other than God. He's more powerful than all of us. And he can overwhelm you. He can overwhelm any one of us. And we need to thank God daily for not letting him do it. And that's what, you're a child of God here. You wouldn't be here this morning if you're not a child of God. If you're already in the Lamb's Book of Life and you're elect, then that's a status you're not going to lose. The problem is, how do we live in this world till we get to that time when we get to go to heaven? That's what he's telling us. We're going to be tempted. That's that two natures that Paul tells us about. The good nature, the divine nature, and the sinful nature, and they always fight against each other. Which one wins depends on how well you do in this world. If you let the sinful nature overcome you, then you're going to have problems in this world. Even though you're a child of God, you're going to have problems in this world. If you ask the Lord to help you with temptation, recognize temptation when it hits you in the face. Anytime you see, you know, something going on, you know, I may want to do something different than come to church when the doors of the church are open. Well, I'm letting that sinful nature overcome me. And Paul tells us here, God will never allow you to be tempted more than you can withstand, and he will give you the grace to withstand it. He will give you the grace to withstand it, and also that you may be able to bear it and escape it. And that's one of those great examples of, but God is faithful. He's not going to depart. He's not ever going to tempt you. Anytime you have a tempting to do something and you have a little bit of guilty feeling about, I need to go visit somebody that's sick. I need to get my Bible down and read it. I want to watch this TV show when I ought to read my Bible and study in the morning to come pray. You don't come to church. You shouldn't be coming to church to hear what Brother Kenny or I or some other minister might say to you. You ought to be coming to church to worship the Lord. Maybe with somebody up here speaking, but we're only speaking because that's the role we've been given. We're not any different than you. We all need to pray that the Lord would bless us. We all need to pray that to come here to worship and give him praise and honor and glory. When we come here to give him all the honor and glory, we're the ones that walk away with a blessing. That's where God is so wonderful to us and merciful to us. When we try to give him the glory, when we try to give him the honor, when we try to give him the praise, we're the ones that walk out with a blessing. It's important you come to church every time and think, I don't feel like going to church. I don't feel like, I don't think I'm going to be blessed. You need to remember, but God can change that. But God can give you a real blessing in this building each time you come to it. But God is always there. We need to think of that in the positive. That's one of those times when but is followed by good news. And it's full. The Bible is full of more references of but God than anything. I was amazed when I started researching and finding. Y'all have been very kind to me with your attention. My prayers, Lord, richly blessed. Come ahead, Brother Kenny, and preach for us.